From Silver Hollow Audio and Radio Catskill, this is Cats Cast. I'm Brett Barry, and each week we bring you stories and conversations rooted right here in our mountains and valleys. Local culture, history, sustainability, nature, literature, and the arts, and lots more. Coming up, a fire tower stored in a barn for 50 years, and the community that brought it back to life. We'll take a hike with Lori Rankin to the top of Bramley Mountain, where plans to re-erect an historic fire tower were taking shape.
I think there's several reasons to rebuild it. The first, quite frankly, is that possibility of fire danger. It's not gone away.
And then, an update on the completed project by Friends of Bramley Mountain Fire Tower President Anne Roberti.
There is no other tower that was taken down and eventually put back up in the same place.
First, this news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. There is no apparent movement in trying to end the shutdown of the federal government, now in its fourth day. Republicans want a temporary bill that would continue spending at previous levels for a short period to allow for negotiations. Democrats want to include a measure that would extend the health care subsidies, now slated to expire this year. Meanwhile, federal employees either can't work or must work without pay. Johnny Jones falls into that category. As a TSA agent, he's considered an essential worker. He says it's tough.
Everybody's starting to make preparations for how they're going to pay the bills. And during the last shutdown, I've known some people that had to take like loans and pay 30% interest on them. It was horrible. And it took them months or even years to recover.
Meanwhile, the White House is going forward with plans to cut programs and spending, primarily in areas with many Democratic voters. NPR's Barbara Sprunt reports.
Democrats have called this an intimidation tactic. They've blasted a plan from the White House's budget arm to fire federal workers instead of temporarily furloughing them, which is usually what happens in a shutdown. Independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont said he thinks that plan will backfire.
And the idea that you have a president who says, hey, your state voted against me, we're going to cut funding for you. That is not only illegal, not only outrageous, it is unconstitutional.
So Democrats like Sanders insist these cuts are illegal, but it's an open question right now. There are several active lawsuits challenging the administration's cuts to congressionally approved spending.
NPR's Barbara Sprunt. The Israeli military is cutting back on some of its operations in Gaza in order to allow Hamas to locate living hostages and exhume the bodies of those who are dead. Hamas said earlier it agreed to a U.S. proposal to hand over all remaining hostages to Israel, after which Israel would end its war in Gaza. But as NPR's Emily Fang reports, there is no ceasefire yet.
Israeli shelling of Gaza continued overnight into Saturday. NPR's Anas Baba in Gaza reported at least three strikes Saturday morning, one of which killed one civilian. Mahmoud Basel, the spokesperson for Gaza's civil defense teams, warned residents not to return to areas the Israeli military was withdrawing from. In a recorded warning, he listed off-limits neighborhoods and said his teams are awaiting an official ceasefire announcement from the U.S. Earlier this week, Israel issued an ultimatum warning all civilians to leave Gaza City in the north or be considered a, quote, supporter of terror. Emily Fang, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
In Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky says a Russian drone struck a railway station today. Dozens were wounded. He said Russians couldn't be unaware that they were attacking civilians. This is NPR News.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Federal cuts to the SNAP program were on the agenda as the New York State Council on Hunger and Food Policy met this week in Albany. The group's mission is to promote New York State agriculture and safeguard the state's food supply. New federal policies put nearly 300,000 New Yorkers at risk of losing their SNAP benefits.
I don't think there's a single program that even touches the breadth and importance of SNAP. I think it's just the most important issue for us to think about as a group.
That's FoodLink's Mitch Gruber, who's a member of the council. Members of the council are also expressing their dismay at the White House for bailing out Argentina and leaving U.S. farmers in the lurch. The Trump administration is proposing a $20 billion loan for that South American country. State Agriculture Commissioner Richard Ball told the council at their Wednesday meeting that the proposal has gotten pushback from farmers in all 50 states.
It happened the way almost everything happens in Washington today. That was not discussed by 50 states at any point. That was done at the White House.
Ball says there's going to be an attempt by the federal government to find some pots of money to pay U.S. farmers for what they're losing in trade. He adds the bailout proposal was not well received anywhere except in Argentina. Ball says federal policy shifts and funding cuts are creating a lot of uncertainty in the battle against hunger. But despite those challenges, New York remains committed to the fight.
The need seems even greater and overwhelming. But I think we work together, we collaborate, we stay in one place. We still have a good story to tell.
This is Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. RWJF is a national philanthropy working toward a future where health is no longer a privilege, but a right. Learn more at rwjf.org.
From Silver Hollow Audio and Radio Catskill, this is Cat's Cast. I'm Brett Barry, and each week we bring you stories and conversations rooted right here in our mountains and valleys. This series takes shape from a documentary-style podcast by the same name, and this weekly radio hour aims to expand the narrative with extended interviews, pertinent updates, and original storytelling for you, our radio listeners. Today, we begin with a bit of history and a vision fulfilled. In 2021, we hiked with Lori Rankin to the top of Bramley Mountain, where a fire tower once stood, and where the newly established Friends of Bramley Mountain Fire Tower were planning to re-erect that tower, which had been disassembled and neatly stored in a local farmer's barn for nearly half a century. First, that story, and then, later, a timely update from Association President Ann Roberti. Spoiler alert, the tower is back.
We have a loop option here for our trail. This way is the quarry, and this way is the main trail. This one kind of follows an old road. There's some excellent views along the way.
We hiked with Lori Rankin, New York State Chapter Director of the Forest Fire Lookout Association, and a board member of the Friends of Bramley Mountain, where an historic fire tower is to be reconstructed at the top of Bramley Mountain Trail, a popular four-mile loop in the Western Catskills.
I'm actually the daughter of a forest fire observer. My dad was the observer at the Balsam Lake Fire Tower over near Margaretville for a number of years. So I kind of grew up on a tower, and I did a lot of hiking. So as an adult, I got involved in volunteering, and this trail that we're walking on was made by volunteers with the Catskill Mountain Club, and it went to the site of a former fire tower, and eventually the owners of the former fire tower stepped forward after the trail was made, and they said, would you like to have the fire tower back there? And so the Friends of Bramley Mountain Fire Tower was formed, and I was asked to be on the board of directors for that.
The trail was designed and built by the Catskill Mountain Club on a parcel owned by the New York City Department of Environmental Protection in the towns of Bovina and Delhi.
I think it's a wonderful partnership. And, you know, let's face it, here in the Catskills, we need to have partnerships because it's too hard to do it by yourself. It creates layers, which create complications, but they also create more partnerships. One of the things here, for example, is I have heard that the local Delaware Otsego Audubon chapter is very excited about the fire tower because it will give them a high point along the Delaware River where they can look at raptor migration. Who would have thought, right? But you've got a whole wealth of supporters of this project. We need to develop those partnerships, and I'm really glad that the DEP and CMC were able to do all that they have.
An hour of climbing from the Bramley Mountain parking area, and we found ourselves at the site of the fire tower, where we continued our conversation
with Lori Rankin.
The way that we came from the parking lot up to this intersection just below the summit here, I believe was actually an old agricultural road. May have also been used secondarily for logging purposes. The Fire Tower Observer did not use that road. When we came to the junction here just below the summit a bit, that was the way that the Observer came, and they came from Bramley Mountain Road here to the summit. And generally they used a Jeep, although some of the roads were in good enough condition they actually would use a pickup truck. The time frame for when this tower was here was 1950, so automobile use was pretty common by then. Prior to 1950, a lot of the fire tower trails actually were ascended on foot or perhaps on horseback. In the early 1900s, when they first started putting fire towers on mountaintops, they didn't have any cabins. And so when bad weather would come, like lightning storms, and you couldn't be in the tower, or just cold and windy weather, the observers didn't have any place to get out of the weather. So they started building little shacks. Some of them might have been made of stone, some of them may have been made of brush. And so in the 1920s, the conservation department said that you had to have livable quarters for your fire tower observer. And so that was when the first observer's cabins came. And there was a fire tower cabin here. The fire tower observer would go there during inclement weather. The fire tower observer might also stay there when there was high fire danger and they needed to be on duty 24/7. And that did happen. Usually your day would end at 5 or 6 p.m. But if there was a fire someplace and you could see it well from this fire tower, you might be expected to stay on duty through the night and actually see the flames traveling and report on that. They also sometimes had their family members with them. And that was perfectly acceptable, especially in the more remote fire tower locations, that you didn't drive back and forth every day and your family would come and stay with you.
Fire towers today are mainly recreational, but historically speaking, their purpose was indeed related to the real threat of fire.
Fire towers started in the early 1900s when we lived in a different time period. Our transportation was mostly by train. Train tracks created sparks. There was also sparks that came out of the stack on a train. We had logging practices, which were very different than they are now, and logging was a huge industry in New York State. We also personally did things differently. We did not have a telephone to speak to someone else. We had to walk or ride a horse to go see someone. So our communication methods were completely different. So in the early 1900s, they started having some really large fires because nature came into play with all those other things and we had a drought. And those large fires had to be communicated through, like I said, the method of either walking or on horseback. And then you had to get people to the fire to fight it. And they often came by train and the trains were speeding. So there were more sparks and more fires followed the trains. And so you can see that you would get really massive fires. So they started putting up these fire towers as an early detection system. And it was an entire system. So they put them up all around New York State. My dad was on the Balsam Lake Fire Tower from 1959 to 1972, which was when they decommissioned that tower. The observer's job was to go up to the mountain every day. At the time when he went on the mountain in 1959, the telephone was their form of communication. So on the way up, you usually followed the telephone line up to make sure that the line was all in a state of repair, because instead of punching a time clock, you would pick up the telephone and you would call your ranger and you would say, Balsam Lake is in service. That way you knew your phone worked, your communication worked, and the ranger knew if you were on time for work or not. So the same process would have happened here at Bramley Mountain. Then you literally did watch for smoke. People think, oh, there's a fire, but actually what you usually see first is smoke. And so you looked for smoke. In the middle of your fire tower cab, you would have a round circular map, which had 0 to 360 degrees, just like a compass on it. And then it had a pointer called an alidade. And if you saw smoke, you would swing the alidade so that it was pointing directly at the smoke. You would use binoculars, which was the second tool that you had in the cab. And you would try to pinpoint the location of the fire. You would pick up the telephone. You would call the next nearest tower. And then you would say, I believe I see fire. I believe it's in Delhi. I have it 35 degrees. What do you have? That fire tower observer would try to see the smoke. And they too would come up with a degree. And after contacting two others, which was the most ideal, the original person who spotted the smoke would call the forest ranger, give all of those numbers. The forest ranger would actually have a string map, and he would move strings out, and where all three strings crossed, that's exactly where the fire was. And much like today's GPS coordinates, he would be able to send fire department resources out there to take care of that fire very quickly.
We asked Lori about the transition from utilitarian to recreational fire tower use in the state.
Over time, logging practices changed, transportation changed, communication changed, and even our recreation changed over time. So by the time you got here to Bramley Mountain in 1950, you'd had quite a recovery in the New York State Forest, and they were actually looking pretty good again. And they had a lot of green leaves, which means a lot of moisture and less chance of them burning. You also had a much better communication system. In 1950, when they put this up, they created an area that matched up with Atsienta Mountain and Rock Rift fire towers so that they covered this area completely, all up and down the Delaware River, basically. They had the tower here for 20 years. It was very effective. There were few fires in the area. And by 1970, New York State said, I don't think we need the fire towers anymore. We just don't have the numbers of fires being reported. And by then, we had this other thing going on called a plane. And planes had communication, and they could cover a really large area really quickly. So they decided to go to planes to monitor fires, and they started closing the fire towers. And so that's why this particular tower was decommissioned. There were still a couple of others in the area, and slowly they stopped using all of them, I think all the way up till 1980, before they closed them all in the Catskills. Then the state had to figure out what to do with them once they decommissioned them. And so they said, well, we'll take them down. They also said, we'll sell them. We'll auction them off. And so that's exactly what they did. They auctioned this one off in a local farmer, the Clark Farm. They actually bought the tower for $50. And along with that purchase, it was their requirement to take the tower down. And so the Clark family has very good memories of that. And they came up here and they spent 4 days taking the tower apart. And they had a tractor and they had a wagon, and they very carefully took everything down, numbered it so that they could put it back together. And they took it to their farm and they put it under cover, and their plan was to put it back up on their property. That didn't pan out, so after they heard about these trails being built in 2016, they got talking about the fire tower, and they said, I wonder if we could offer it to the Catskill Mountain Club and if they could see it go back to where it once was. And so they very graciously have given the tower to the group to do that. There were just over 100 towers. I've heard the number of 102 and 106 in New York State. There are 72 standing towers now. And a majority of those are on public land and available to the public. They cannot all be climbed, but they are still standing. There are 5 as part of the Catskill Fire Tower project now. But then since then, we have had the Upper Sopus Fire Tower added. Atsienta in Stamford is like just on the edge of the park line. Rock Rift Fire Tower is still standing, and that's in Delaware County. And they're working on restoring that as well. So the numbers are variable.
And soon that variable number will increase by 1. We asked Lori why this project is important. And it turns out, it's not just for the views.
I think there's several reasons to rebuild it. The first, quite frankly, is that possibility of fire danger. It's not gone away. And finally, we can explain that to people by just watching the evening news, which is kind of a terrible thing to say. But we are seeing these awful fires out west. And that could certainly happen here in the Catskills. We do have invasive species which are threatening our ash population and even our hemlock population. And so if we have a lot of standing dead trees and then we add to that a drought, we could have some serious fires here still. So there's certainly still I think, a very good need for the fire spotting purposes of a fire tower. But additionally, the one thing that went away when they started closing the fire towers, which is so important and was never really considered until they were gone, is the public relations piece. The conservation department had that, a fire tower observer who connected with the public each and every day when they came to visit the towers. And they were able to explain to them things like fire prevention. And they were able to explain to them where a trailhead was located, where to put their garbage. So it was constant hiker education that was going on just as part of the job, but it was never in the job description, this public relations piece. And I think that that's sorely needed right now with a huge increase in the number of visitors that we have to outdoor recreation, but at the same time, we're not seeing big numbers reflected in terms of forest rangers, assistant forest rangers, and those types of things. And then the third thing that I think happens is that we are bringing people to these communities. And when people come to these communities to recreate, they're buying maps, they're buying gas, they're buying dinner. They are staying over at a hotel or a B&B or something. And so it's a big thing in terms of tourism. So I think all three of those are really, really good reasons why fire towers should be back.
The fire tower itself was generously donated by the family that bought it from the state back in 1975. But re-erecting it will take time, volunteers, and money.
So the fire tower was donated to the Catskill Mountain Club, which is wonderful. But the fire tower steel also needs to have some things done to it before it's ready to go back up. So the steel is galvanized so that it can withstand the weather here on the mountaintop. So that will be re-galvanized, and there's certainly a cost to that. There will be new nuts and bolts for the fire tower, so there's a cost to that. We're going to put in brand new footings just to make sure that the tower is secured well to the ground. You have to think about, too, in the process currently of putting up any building, is you have to go through the steps of having plans. So we have to have engineers' drawings, and there's a cost associated with that. We have to go through the different permitting processes, etc. We also want to make sure that we have proper signage here. We're doing a myriad of things aside from grants. Different sponsorship levels are available for people who'd like to donate. And quite frankly, it's just as important to us that people are able to put some money into the donation box at the trailhead, or to send a little bit of money through, electronic donations or something to the effort. We are actively looking for people who will be able to lend a hand with anything. We also are working pretty closely with SUNY Delhi, outdoor recreation, carpentry students, etc. there that are going to work with us too. So that's an excellent resource as well.
In just a moment, an interview with Friends of Bramley Mountain Fire Tower President Ann Roberti with a major update on this project.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we've got three great new cookbooks we're in love with, from a fabulous look at the French way with chocolate, to the cuisines of the Silk Road, to Asian takeout at home. It's all coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table. Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with the local edition. Weeknights at 6, right after All Things Considered. The local edition, only on Radio Catskill.
Ann Roberti, thank you for joining us. In June of 21, we interviewed Lori Rankin about what was then a project in a very nascent stage, bringing back the Bramley Mountain Fire Tower. Can you tell me what's your association with this project, and how did you collaborate with Lori and other people and organizations to reestablish the tower?
Well, I'm the president of Friends of Bramley Mountain Fire Tower. The way that happened is I am on the board of the Catskill Mountain Club, and I'm one of the trail designers and builders and maintainers for the club. And I did work on the designing and building the Bramley Mountain Trail. And after Tom Clark contacted the club and said that he would be interested in donating the tower if it could be put back on Bramley, I raised my hand and said I'd be interested in working on that project. I never had any idea of quite how much work that was going to entail when I raised my hand. But I did undertake that, and we spun off the nonprofit. The Catskill Mountain Club is also a 501c3, but we decided to make a separate Friends of Bremen Mountain Fire Tower so that fundraising and all of those things could be very clearly for the tower or for the club and its other work. And then I went and asked around for other people to join our board. So we have some other members of the Catskill Mountain Club board are also on our board, but other people like Lori, who has a wealth of information about fire towers, and Jillian Lefevre, who's in the business community. We just got quite a number of other people involved as well. If Lori had not been willing to be on the board, not sure I would have undertaken it, because she just gave us so much information on how to go about this and connections to make and things like that.
Yeah, she had a personal history and memories of the fire tower when it was there the first time around, right?
Right, right. And she's also involved in restoring many other fire towers.
So the Bramley Mountain Fire Tower was in storage for many years at the Clark family.
50 years.
And what was the condition of it when you were offered all of the elements to reconstruct?
It was in excellent condition. Almost all of the pieces were usable. There was about 12 braces that had crimpings that were originally too tight, so that when it was galvanized, the galvanizing material couldn't get into that crimp, but water could. So we remade those. Actually, interestingly, some of the braces were made from the shorter braces could be made from the longer ones that we couldn't use, because you just cut off the rusted end, refolded them. So we only had to replace a small handful of pieces. Everything else was in great shape. We did have it sandblasted and regalvanized. And we used all new nuts and bolts because, you know, that you do that. Mm-hmm. And we also decided to replace the wooden steps, which they still actually had all the original wooden steps and landings for the tower. But we decided to replace them with metal grippy treads so that people could still climb the tower in the winter. And even when it's not winter, when it's wet, the wooden steps can be a little slippery. So we've eliminated that problem. And we made some benches for the summit out of original landing wood. So that's kind of fun.
Nice. Yeah, I was just going to ask, I was curious if you were able to use those old wooden steps for something else.
Yeah, we are also thinking about seeing if people want to bid on some of the old steps that still have people's initials carved and names carved into them. But that's a future project.
Yeah, sounds like a fun fundraising idea.
Yeah.
So you're a trail designer. We'll get back to that in a minute, because I'm curious how you even got into that work. But it seems like a big leap from trail designing to understanding how to recreate a fire tower in a safe and efficient way. So what kind of research or training did you have to go through to make sure everything was up to spec and safe and meeting whatever requirements, whatever authorities are involved would impose on that type of structure?
Well, I didn't really go through any training. A lot of the things I just learned as you go along. And we had a contractor that is experienced in restoring fire towers. And he actually has been doing fire towers all over the country. So he knew a lot of the, he knew how to put it back up. We had to go to the town and find out what we needed to do with the town. The DEP has their own process. I've already worked a lot with the DEP and have had a very good relationship with them because of all the trails that we've built. So it was pretty easy working with them, and they turned out to be so helpful to us in so many ways. So, you know, just kind of learning things as you go. I didn't know about what kind of steel requirements we had until we had to get engineers' report. Same thing with concrete. I learned a lot about concrete as we were working on getting the footers put in and tested and all those kind of things. But so it was interesting.
So you, as part of the CMC, Catskill Mountain Club, have been involved with trail designing and building. How did you get into that work? I don't think that that was your career, right? So this is more of an avocation and...
Right. I was a computer programmer, so pretty far away from trail design, although you design things as a programmer. But I've been a big hiker, and I was on the board of the Catskill Mountain Club, and also on another organization that's kind of dissolved by now, but called Andy's Works. And we were opposed to fracking in our area. And one of the members of Andy's Works said that we need to be able to contribute to the area, not just say we're against things. And I thought, you know, oh, yeah, what am I going to be able to contribute? I didn't think it would be anything. And then I went to a presentation about the benefit of hiking trails that are family friendly and near towns. And I thought I could do that. I just kind of lit a fire under me. And I immediately started working on getting permission to build a hiking trail on the old rail bed in Andes. We got permission to go about a mile. And then the next landowner said that we could not go on their property. But the people who own the property uphill of him said, come on our property. So then we had to lay out a hiking trail. It was no longer just going on the rail bed. We had to have, and it was pretty steep. So it was a lot of work trying to find a way up there that was, you know, reasonable. And so I and Bob Moses worked on that. We joke that we went out there 100 times trying to lay out the trail. And we were just doing it as novices. Eventually, we took a class together on trail design. And there was a lot of things in it that we saw, oh, we were actually instinctively doing this. Like you would route the trail around something really interesting, even if it wasn't the quickest way up. And how to deal with slopes and things like that. So after that, Bob and I became the main designers, and the Catskill Mountain Club took off with the trail building effort. So the rail trail was so successful that we looked at several DEP parcels, and we built a trail on the Shavertown parcel by the Shavertown Bridge next. And we have, I think, 6 or 7 trails we've built now.
And the fire tower is also on DEP property?
Yes, it is.
What's it like to get permission to build trails on DEP property? I mean, traditionally, the DEP has been very restrictive about how their land is accessed and used. Has that changed?
Yes, it has. They are still pretty restrictive on the land right around reservoirs. I think fishing is the and recreational boating are the only activities allowed right adjacent to the reservoir, but they've been opening up their properties so that you, even without a trail, people can hike on a lot of DEP property. But when we approached them, I think it was 2014 or 2013 was our first trail. They were very receptive to it. I think there was a change in attitude about what the DEP should be contributing to the community, and they were very receptive. The process has actually gotten more complicated since then, a little bit more formalized, but we have to come up with the trail layout, and they'll have to approve it. If there's water areas, they're They have a group in the DEP that comes out to look at how we're managing that. We have to provide some insurance certificates to them and a whole management plan for the trail and things like that. So it's a little bit of an involved process, but not too onerous.
So the process took how long, Anne, from conception to completion, because the fire tower now exists in its finished state and hikers are enjoying it. So
I raised my hand to work on this in 2017.
Wow.
So it was about 8 years. Some of that was, the preliminary. The first thing we did is go to the DEP and say, would you even consider this? And it was such a different thing than they've ever allowed before that they had to, talk amongst themselves and figure out whether it would be something that they would allow. And then we had to raise money. And then we had some setbacks with some of working with the town of Delhi that we had to work through. But the county, Delaware County, came in as partners when the town of Delhi backed out. And then we went full steam ahead once the county stepped in to work with us.
Does the trail utilize the same trail that the fire tower keepers were using back in the day, or did you have to reroute it?
It does not use the trail that the fire tower observers use. That trail goes through private property now. The way that the Catskill Mountain Club has designed the trail is we've made a nice loop where you start out walking on a gradual incline to a quarry and then go through a very ruggedy hiking trail that climbs through some really beautiful rock areas and things and then gets to the summit. And then you go down what Lori said was an agricultural road originally. I wasn't aware of that, but it was definitely a logging road. Bramley was logged before the DEP bought it. The owner logged it extensively. So that road was pretty rough, but it was a road that big vehicles had been on. So one of the things the DEP did for us is to improve that road for vehicle passage. So there was some spots where there was a giant boulder right in the middle of the road that would have been very hard to get over. And they smoothed that out. They rerouted in one spot that was a little bit too on an angle. And they just did a lot of work to help us be able to use that road to get up. So that's now called the Summit Trail. It's the fastest way if you wanted to just go up quickly and tag the tower, the peak. You could just go up and down the summit trail. But the nicer way is to go up the quarry trail and down the summit trail because you're facing the beautiful things to see in both directions when you go that route, where a lot of things are behind you if you go the other way.
What's the total mileage and how accessible is this for the average hiker?
The total mileage is just a little under 4 if you do the whole loop. It's moderate, I guess I would say. Yeah. There's in both areas, there are some steep spots. On the summit trail, there's some pretty steep spots, and then you get a break for a little while, and then another steep spot, and you get a break. On the quarry trail, your break is the whole way to the quarry, and then it's a little bit steeper the rest of the way to the summit.
Is the fire tower situated on the same footprint and the same orientation?
It is slightly off orientation and footprint because we left the old footers in place. We didn't use the old footers because we would have had to do a lot of engineering tests to see if they were still good enough. And we thought the chances were they might not be, and we just didn't want to go through that expense only to find out we couldn't use them. So the new footers are just slightly askew of the old footers.
Yeah, and then I guess a benefit to that, too, is that you have that historic record.
Exactly.
You can still see that old foundation.
Yeah, you could sit on them.
Wow, that's great. So what all went into putting it back together again? How many, give me a sense of the suppliers and the contractors and the galvanizing process and where you got all these pieces from for something that was built many years ago. Was it a challenge to kind of match those parts, or were they pretty standard?
It wasn't a challenge to match the parts because the contractor, he had the pieces that had to be replaced, refabricated. The nuts and bolts were easily available. The footers were a pretty big job for the contractor to construct. They have to be set up, aligned, and leveled just exactly to make the tower go up easily. If they're slightly off, then the tower is not going to get put together as easily as it would. He did an incredible job with that. We had to dig holes down to bedrock, so at least 4 feet, but we hit bedrock before that. Then he drilled down into there and put these giant anchor bolts in there, and then they get epoxied into the hole as well, and then concrete forms built around the holes and then filled up with concrete. We had to have concrete inspectors there testing the concrete as it's being mixed, and then taking samples back and testing its compression over several weeks and things before we got the go-ahead that the footers were good. So that was a bit of a process. The contractor again purchased for us the metal grates for the landings and the stair treads. Those are very available. They're used for a lot of different purposes now, so that wasn't a problem. That getting stuff up to the top was a little bit more of a challenge, but getting the materials, not too bad.
And the funding, where did that come from? Can you give a sense of what the expense was for this project?
Altogether, it was about $125,000.
Reasonable.
Some people wonder when you already had the tower why it was so much. But again, we had to, when we had it sandblasted and galvanized, we had to take it to Hubble Galvanizing in Utica. So there's the expense of getting it from the farm, bringing it to Utica, picking it back up from Utica, the whole sandblasting and galvanizing. Was an expense. Of course, the contractor was an expense. You know, he worked many, many, many days there. So that was one of our biggest expenses. The fundraising was easier than I expected, in part because we got two grants from the county, two tourism grants from the county. So that gave us $50,000. And then there was just such excitement in the community that people were donating, and we have a couple of other foundations, like O'Connor gave us some money and livestock, but all the rest of it came from the community, and even people around the country who heard about it, who are fire tower aficionados, made donations and things. So that was surprisingly easy compared to some of the other things going on with the tower.
Yeah. I mean, I just got a price for a fireplace insert, and it's very, you know, everything's gone up so much in expense that when you said $125,000 to completely refurbish this thing, I thought that's actually seems like quite a deal. I thought it was more than that.
Yeah. We had to have a couple of windows remade, and all the other windows had to be refurbished because they're wood and they didn't hold up, you know, quite as well.
So this tower, like many, was deaccessioned many years ago when fire towers fell into disuse, no longer needed for their original purposes. Are there other fire towers that are sitting in barns somewhere throughout the Catskills, like this one happened to be at the Clark family barn?
I don't know if there are any in the Catskills, but throughout the country, there are fire towers sitting in places. The contractor that we used, Mike Villegi, is often buying towers from one place and moving it to somewhere else. And that brings up one of the things that's really very unique about our tower, is that it was put back up in the same place that it was originally. There is no other tower that was taken down and eventually put back up in the same place. So that's kind of a fun fact that we learned during the construction process.
When I spoke to Lori Rankin in 2021, when this we hiked the property and she showed me where the tower would hopefully go, she talked about some of the useful features of fire towers throughout history. One, well, the most important, of course, being to spot fires and to triangulate with other fire tower keepers what do you call them? Not keepers, but
observers.
Observers, to use some triangulation and math to determine where the fire is and radio to the fire department to put it out. Well, that was supplanted by airplanes and other things. And the fire risk, I think, came down because of less use with rails and things like that that were causing fires. But the other thing that she mentioned was hiker education. That was kind of a secondary thing that came out of these fire towers. When people would hike up mountains, the fire tower observer had a lot to say about, being a good steward of the land and education about the surrounding mountains and things like that. So now that's really a big part of it again, right?
It absolutely is. So we have about 35 people who are volunteer stewards at the tower, and they've all been trained to understand how the observers used to work, so they can explain that to people who visit the tower. We have a map a map table and an alidade, just like the observers used to use. And the stewards can show people how you spot fires and triangulate and things like that. And they have a wealth of knowledge about the history of the tower originally and its return. And they just love sharing that information with people. As a matter of fact, when I looked at some Google reviews and people mentioned how great the stewards are up there, rangers, they call them, but they're really stewards. And we've gotten contacted and had groups come up already. We are planning a trip from the Environmental Club of South Courtright. They're coming up in October to view the tower. The Andes Outdoor Club came up very early in the season, and we just had a boys' camp up there recently. And, we love telling them about everything to do with the environment and the tower history, and the people really love to hear it too.
I would imagine that the trail is open 365 days of the year, but maybe not the fire tower stewards might not be there on that schedule.
Right. The stewards are only there on Saturday, Sundays, and holidays from Memorial Day weekend through Indigenous Peoples Day. So the stewarding season is almost over. And that's from about 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and it's weather permitting. We do pop-up openings that we announce on Facebook and Instagram because, sometimes we think it'd be fun to open it on a cold January day and see who comes up. Mm-hmm. People can still climb the tower itself up to the landing just before the cab, but the cab is locked when there's no volunteer there.
And I would imagine you're still getting some really, really significant views from that, even that level when the cab
is closed. Absolutely, yes. It can be a bit windy up there, though.
Yeah. Great. So how long has the fire tower been open to the public?
So we got our certificate of completion on January 2nd of 2025. So we did our first opening on January 4th, 2025. It was only 2 hours long because it was quite cold, but we had, I think, about 20 people come to visit that day. And our ribbon cutting was May 2nd, and we've been opened on weekends since then.
And the response?
It's incredible. We've had 100 people on some days. Some percentage climb the tower, maybe like 80 or 90%. There's people who just get a little bit scared of the of the height and things like that. But it's beautiful up on the summit as well. We have some beautiful Adirondack chairs and a couple of benches that look over the view towards the high peak. So even if you can't climb the tower, it's still quite beautiful. And once you climb the tower, you get 360 degree views. On a very clear day, you could see the wind turbines that are in Windsor, which is about 60 miles away. With binoculars, you can always see them unless it's foggy. And we can see Balsam Lake Fire Tower and Mount Usayantha Fire Tower. So, and a lot of the high peaks and things.
How many times have you been up there since it's been opened?
Oh, I can't even count. countless times. And I was up there almost every day of the construction. I was doing time-lapse video and taking a lot of pictures. I really wanted to document the whole construction process.
Yeah, it's got to be an incredible sense of accomplishment for you and for the organization.
It is. It is. Sometimes when you hike up the trail, when you're about a mile up, you can start to see it. And sometimes I think like, wow, I can't believe it's actually there now.
Yeah.
And we were part of the Forest Fire Lookout Association's Light the Tower event. So for that, fire towers around the state lit up on the Saturday of Labor Day weekend. And I had been looking forward to that for a few years. So it was very exciting to be part of that this year.
Were you able to see the light from the other fire tower?
Yes. Yep. And we could text each other. So I was like texting the stewards at Usayantha and saying, "Do you have red and green on your tower?" And they're like, "Yes." You know, so that was very fun.
Yeah. So texting's new since the last that fire was up, and so are those Google reviews that you say are being left for the fire tower stewards. That's
right.
That's obviously a new development, which is kind of neat.
I wanted to mention too that, you know, the historic nature of it is so cool, that it used to be there, that this went back to the exact same spot it was on. So many people in the community have climbed the tower when it was up there the first time. And last weekend, Ray Lefevre, the Bovina town historian, showed up at the tower with his card from 1961 that he proudly showed to the stewards and got his picture taken with them. And we have climbed the tower cards for people too. If they visit when a steward is there, the steward will fill out an "I climb the tower" card. Mm. And another difference from the last time is that if you bring that card to 80 Main in Delhi or the Andes Hotel or Wayside, you get something for it. 80 Main gives a free appetizer, and the hotel and Wayside Cider will give you 10% off your bill if you bring your "I Climb the Tower" card.
Well, that's so much fun.
Yeah.
Were cards like that given out when fire tower observers were?
Yep. So Ray has his from 1961 with the observer who was there in 61.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really neat. I didn't know about that little piece of history. So, and just tell me a little bit about the Casco Mountain Club. The Friends of Bramley Mountain Fire Tower was developed from the club. It's one of the programs, and now it's come to, I'm sure it's still going because you'll need to keep this fire tower maintained and staffed. But what else does the Catskill Mountain Club do, and how does that fit into the overall kind of outdoor opportunities that the whole region has to offer?
So the Catskill Mountain Club offers guided activities, mostly hikes. But we do some paddles and some other things that are free to anyone who wants to come on them. They just need to look at the Catskill Mountain Club website and sign up for them. We have a 10-day celebration in October every year. We work with the Catskill Center on this called Lark in the Park, and we try to have many activities throughout those 10 days that people can come on for free. I'm leading a hike on a Wednesday to the fire tower because there are some people who work on the weekends and haven't been able to get there. So And there's, I'm also doing a paddle. So those are fun things that you can just sign up to do. We also build and maintain trails. Maintaining is quite a bit of work, as you can imagine. The blackberries on Bramley are quite a formidable foe for us up there. So we're always looking for volunteers who want to help do things like trail maintenance. And we have volunteers who lead the different hikes and things like that. We have some great people who do that. And we do also some educational things. We just had a reading from a local author's book about walking the Shokan Rail Trail every day for a year. So so a lot of stuff going on with the Catskill Mountain Club.
So this this latest achievement's quite a feather in the club's cap. What's the next big project?
Well, there's something going on. Morris Hill is a trail that we've been working on for a while near the Arkville Rec Center and Water Discovery Center. We're hoping to get that finished soon. It had some difficult terrain to navigate because we don't want to go, you know, straight up a steep slope. So in the Catskills, that could be pretty hard to try and even switchbacks are very hard if it's very steep. So we're hoping to get that done soon. And there's another project in Roxbury that we're in the very preliminary stages of right now.
How do people learn more, Anne, either about the Catskill Mountain Club or about the Bramley Mountain Fire Tower? What's the best way to keep in touch and learn about some of these events that kind of pop up throughout the year?
Well, social media is a good place, Facebook and Instagram. We post a lot, especially if we're doing, like, as I said, pop-up openings of the tower and things. Both the Catskill Mountain Club and Friends of Bramley have our social media accounts. And we have websites. The Catskill Mountain Club posts all the events on their website, so that's a good place. We both have email lists, which those are more for longer-term news, not to find out what's going on tomorrow or something, but it's good to sign up for the email lists.
And the Catskill Mountain Club is a member-based organization. Can you tell me about that and what membership affords you?
The membership is member-based. We have membership fees, but really people can participate with the club without becoming a member. So we hope that they would just to support our work because we have to buy tools for trail maintenance, signage. We're constantly replacing trail markers. There's a lot of things that you wouldn't think of that are an expense, both for Friends of Bramley and for the Catskill Mountain Club that the minor membership fee helps to support, or donations in the case of Friends of Bramley. But with both places, you don't have to pay anything to enjoy the benefits.
That's great. So I would imagine that people will take a hike with the group and then they're immediately convinced to join as a member and continue enjoying. Well, Anne, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat about this. It's a really exciting project, and it's nice to see it come to completion and that people are immediately enjoying it and using it. And I guess if you want to experience the cab at the very top of the fire tower, the best time to do that would be between now and Indigenous Peoples Day until next spring. But the trail is always open, and I'm looking forward to checking it out myself.
Great, great. Thank you, Brett. Appreciate it.
More at BramleyMountainFireTower.org and CatskillMountainClub.org. CatsCast, the Catskills podcast, has its home at CatsCast.com, where stories are archived, transcribed, and searchable. Until next week, I'm Brett Barry, and this is CatsCast.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's oldest independent community bank, offering deposit and loan products for more than 110 years. Members FDIC and Equal Housing Lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. More information at jeff.bank. And from the Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, dedicated to promoting the Sullivan County Catskills. SullivanCatskills.com. And from listeners like you.
I'm Janice Adams. Starting Monday, October 6th, join me on my new day and new time, Monday evenings at 8, for the Janice Adams Show. Crucial conversations about race, every race, and courage. The courage to listen, to speak up, to make a way out of no way. The Janice Adams Show, Monday nights at 8, starting October 6th on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.